It's time for Twig This Week in Google. Jeff Jarvis and Stacey Higginbotham are here. Of course, we're going to talk about the president's tweets. Is Google in trouble? How about the rest of the tech industry? Also, our changelog is back and a whole lot more. It's my last episode before I head out on vacation, so it's going to be a little fun. This Week in Google is next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 471, recorded Wednesday, August 29th, 2018. Twitch Slap. This Week in Google is brought to you by Cashfly. Make this the last month your CDN bill gives you a headache, and join the thousands of others, like me, who trust Cashfly's reliable network. For a complimentary, detailed analysis of your current CDN bill and usage trends, visit twit.cashfly.com. And by MasterClass, online classes taught by the world's greatest minds. Visit masterclass.com/twig to unlock access to every MasterClass for one low annual price. And by Slack. Slack is a collaboration hub for work to make sure the right people in your team are always in the loop and key information is always at their fingertips. Learn more at slack.com. It's time for Twig, This Week in Google, the show where we talk about Google, but also Facebook and the internet and journalism and all sorts of stuff, Internet of Things, because, of course, we have among our hosts, Stacey Higginbotham, who is the host of Stacey on IoT. She does a podcast with Kevin Toefel about Internet of Things. Does a great newsletter, too, at StaceyOnIoT.com. Hello, Stacey.
Hello. You almost caught me off guard, looking at my phone, making funny faces.
Were you Snapchatting?
No, I was just trying to figure out an app. It's all good.
Maybe a little later we'll find out what that app is. Stacey is in Austin, Texas, and in New Jersey today, it looks like. We've got Jeff Jarvis, professor of journalism at the City University.
Wearing my Twitch shirt.
Oh, I like that. You look good.
Yeah.
I don't have a Twitch shirt.
Well,
this is old.
We can arrange one.
This is old.
We'll get you. You want some swag? We can send you swag. That's easy. I'll show you. I got a Twit belt. Look at this.
I thought you were going to show me something different.
No.
Oh, nice. Fancy.
It says Twit on my belt. See?
Oh, my.
I like it.
Lisa got that for me in case I get lost in Barcelona. On the inside, it says, please return me to...
Well, and of course, if it does fall off, there'll be a Twit logo on your ass, so they can identify you that way.
It says, yeah, please see ass. Yeah. Poor Stacey, you didn't get here for this kind of treatment.
So.
All right, finally, we have a reason to talk about the President of the United States on This Week in Google.
Yeah, we can't avoid it, can we?
No.
He says Google is rigging search results against him and calls it very dangerous. Apparently, he had never Googled his name before. I don't know.
There was a Pajamas Media story that apparently got through to, I guess, Fox that got to him.
Is Pajamas Medium Diamond and Silk?
No, that's the old Glenn Reynolds.
Okay.
Instapundit.
Instapundit.
I don't know if Glenn's still on that, but a whole bunch of conservative people back in the day started a conservative blog company called Pajamas Media because the old joke was the bloggers wore their pajamas.
Right.
And so now it's a fairly right side, I mean, right end of spectrum, very right end of spectrum, I would say, but so, not as far as these days. You can't, where do you put things? You can't tell, but
so,
it's conservative.
This is Paula Bolyard. On pjmedia.com. Is it his conspiracy theory? How do I get rid of this? I don't want that. And how do I get rid of this? God, the web is just a mess. Is it a conspiracy theory to suggest Google is biased against conservatives?
That's what we need is AMP.
We need AMP.
Google.
Here's the original tweet pair. Google search results for Trump news shows only the viewing reporting of fake news media. In other words, they have it rigged, capital letters, for me and others, so that almost all stories and news is bad. Fake CNN is prominent. Republican, conservative, fair media shutout. Illegal? This is the thing that should concern you. Illegal? 96% of Google search results for Trump news shows only the viewing reporting of fake news media. Oh, wait a minute. I got a loop. I got a Trump loop. I'm sorry. 96% of results on Trump news are from the national left-wing media. Very dangerous. Google and others are suppressing voices of conservatives and hiding information and news that is good. They are controlling what we can and cannot see. This is a very serious situation. Will be addressed. So that's the two things that are concerning in here to me. I mean, of course, he's going to go off, and this has been a long-standing trope that you know, the media is liberal and they aren't giving conservative voices.
Which, by the way, I will argue fairly is true.
Yeah.
And I've argued often that we haven't invested in conservative, responsible conservative media to create an alternative to Fox. So when you do go on, yeah, it's national liberal media and Fox, because that's the only alternative there is for people. That much is true. But that ain't Google's fault. That's the AQ system.
So Paula Bolyard, who wrote this story originally for PG Media.
I didn't
ask about muted. No, yeah, thank you. I muted you, so don't tell me it's muted. Just mute yourself. I haven't used that.
Laptops, she performed multiple Google News searches for the word Trump. I don't know how sophisticated, by the way, she is, if she did it in incognito mode or not. That's not indicated here.
Exactly.
Issued under her account.
She had wrote a piece for the Washington Post saying, oops, I didn't know what I started here. Regulation, I'm a conservative, so I don't want regulation.
Yeah, that's the problem with this. And by the way, here's the two words that worry me, illegal and will be addressed. Now,
okay, no. If they were from like a legitimate policymaker, sure. But Trump is not.
Yeah.
He's not a policy-oriented person.
He says a lot of things.
He is the president of the freaking United States.
He is the president.
I know. And it is possible that one of his staff members would say, oh, I should take it upon myself to make this happen, kind of like Stephen Miller did with immigration. But most of his staff members would look at that and say, oh, that is not something our base is going to appreciate. So yes, is this worrisome? No, or not. No, it's not worrisome. I don't think there's going to come up. Something's not going to come up with this.
So somebody in the chat room, RF2020, says Google is definitely shadow banning people it does not like.
I would ask for proof and a definition of not shadow banning, but Google shows you what it thinks you want to see.
That's why in order to do this properly, you have to go into an incognito mode or log out of your Google account, because it will, of course, change search results. Oddly, though, if you do that and enter Donald J. Trump, you'll get Fox News as one of the first results. So maybe I don't. You know, is it showing the president what he wants to see? Probably not.
Well, word is he doesn't use a desktop computer. He doesn't know how to.
Oh, so it's on mobile.
Well, or somebody showed it to him. Or
actually,
read that
you know what? He probably didn't do the search. He just saw this.
Yeah.
Now, Paula Bolyard herself tweeted, for those who are asking, I'm not calling for government regulations to solve the problem of biased social media outlets. They're private companies. They can run their companies however they want. Government almost always makes things worse, which is a fairly reasonable response.
Stacey, the problem, though, is a couple things. One, there's a chill. You don't have to pass a law to have an impact. Two, this is the president of the United States. So I would argue that football players in the NFL who have kneeled have a civil rights case, a First Amendment case against Trump, because he's trying to intimidate. He's trying to get them fired. He's trying to use the power of his office to stifle their speech. And he's trying to influence Twitter and Facebook and now Google to make changes because of the power of his office and because of what he brings. That's precisely what the First Amendment is meant to protect from, is that kind of authoritarianism. That's precisely what he's trying to bring to this. So I agree with Leo. I'm still worried whether or not you pass a law, the attempt that he's making here. And the larger thing that he's doing, of course, is that he's going after anyone with authority other than him, right? The media,
sure.
The enemy of the people. The FBI, the Justice Department are all wrong. Google is now doing this. Facebook and Twitter are unfair to conservatives, blah, 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 blah. So believe none of them. Truth isn't truth. Believe only me. Classic technique.
Okay. And I say, as a free speech thing, I can see this. I wouldn't worry about actual regulations coming from this, which is kind of where my brain was heading. And but
it's
I'm not going to. It is disturbing. I am far more upset by Trump's misuse of his office just for petty everyday corruption, like having the Secret Service stay in his hotels while he still has ownership stakes in them, and some of the things his family members are doing. That is far more disturbing to me than just him bullying people from Twitter. I do see that that is an issue.
What about the case made here by Oliver Darcy of CNN? This is a quote from his story. With his tweet, Trump has signaled that he and his Republican allies would continue to paint tech giants like Facebook and Twitter as villains in a long-standing culture war used to excite the conservative base. That seems to me much more likely what he's up to, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's always politics. And in this case, it's great to have an enemy, especially as you're going into an election. And what it looks like to me now, it's Google, Facebook, Twitter, the internet elites. We already have the media elites, but now it's the internet elites that are also villains, right?
Right. And you have the New York Post and Fox News that are also going at Rupert Murdoch has been going after the platforms all along. So now they're in line with each other attacking Google and also the other platforms from a competitive standpoint. And then I'm trying to talk to people from my world, from media today on Twitter, saying that this puts us media in the same firing line as the platforms. And we need to defend the platform's speech here to defend our own. And so media being constantly, dystopian and shooting at the platforms as competitors, fine, that's business. But there's unintended consequences to be had here. We're watching them happen as of now.
So here's my quibble with this. Trump has a problem with truth. What he calls fake news and a left oriented bias in the media is very different than what, the Bushes may have experienced. And yes, are many people who write for the media, are we mostly liberal? I would say probably so. And I'm sure there's data to back that up, and I'm sure you have it, Jeff. So I think really what he's doing here is he's just outlying. And I'm not worried about that. I mean, I am worried about that in one sense, but the problem here isn't that Google is biased. The problem is that Trump is deciding that everything that he doesn't like is not true and thus biased and thus, quote unquote, illegal.
Of course, there's a much larger issue. Nobody disagrees with you on that, but because it's This Week in Google, I thought I'd focus on the impact on the tech sector.
We can't argue if the stove started the fire or if it was, a lit match. The house is on fire, you guys. Let's not focus.
I'm surprised to hear you say that because I just thought you didn't want to talk about that.
Anyway, what
do you do if you're Google and let's say 80% of media, is left-leaning? Change your search results to be 50-50 and by doing so boost up the 20% that's not? And
it's not left-leaning necessarily. While the writers may be left-leaning, most of the stuff news organizations write is still true.
Right.
So
That's an important distinction.
And just by arguing for this, in that argument that you were set to make, falls into this camp of the same sort of, we can't be biased against anti-vaxxers. We must report both sides equally. That's bull. And I love science. I love media. I actually used to be more conservative in a fiscal way.
Then you were in Austin.
Well, no, I mean, even more conservative than people in Austin.
So when the president of the United States says to tech companies, better be careful, as he does here. Let me see if my audio is functioning.
Serious thing, and it's a very serious charge. I think what Google and what others are doing, if you look at what's going on at Twitter.
Scroll down, maybe.
If you look at what's going on.
Oh, he's not showing what I'm showing. So, let's start over. Let's start over. So, this was yesterday.
I think Google is really taking advantage of a lot of people, and I think that's a very serious thing, and it's a very serious charge. I think what Google and what others are doing, if you look at what's going on at Twitter, if you look at what's going on in Facebook, they better be careful because you can't do that to people. You can't do it. We have literally thousands and thousands of complaints coming in And you just can't do that. So I think that Google and Twitter and Facebook, they're really treading on very, very troubled territory, and they have to be careful. It's not fair to large portions of the population.
That worries me. They have to be careful. What do they have to be careful of?
He doesn't ever say. He's so
He doesn't need to articulate.
Yeah, I know.
He doesn't need
he's
to.
Not...
No, actually, you could make the argument he's smart enough not to say concretely.
Right. That's right. What I say.
That it's sufficient merely to say that, and then the wheels start turning.
Look how Facebook has tripped over itself since its trending. Kerfuffle.
And Jack Dorsey at Twitter.
And Jack Dorsey going on Fox, right? They are tripping over themselves to try to not get in trouble with
are they whatever afraid the hell of regulation? The right is today. Or are they afraid of, I don't know, Molotov cocktails? What are they worried about?
I think they're afraid of regulation. I think they're afraid of boycotts. I think they're afraid of advertisers getting scared of them.
That could have a real impact. Sure. I think they're probably also afraid of the disconnect between the regulatory environment they're finding themselves in the U.S. and the historical way they have run their companies and their user base here in the U.S. Because as a country that's fragmented and being from the U.S., I think they're good. I mean, it would be terrifying to suddenly be like, holy cow, we have to uphold these same sort of rules that we uphold in kind of more authoritarian places right. where we're used to that. But their employees are here. Those people are not going to let them do this. So, I mean, that's got to be terrifying as a company.
Google said yesterday when users search for content, quote, our goal is to make sure they receive the most relevant answers in a matter of seconds. We make hundreds of improvements to our algorithms every year to ensure high-quality content is returned in response to users' queries. We never, this is the important quote, we never rank, this I'm reading from Time, we never rank search results to manipulate political sentiment. Is that true?
I would think so. It would be, the best way to answer this actually would be to look at what they've done in other countries where the government has historically been more proactive about what Google shows people.
Right.
I would say it's a doubly bad time for Google to go into China.
Yeah. I mean, we talked about this last week that Google has, and Sergey Brin admitted, has a project to create a censored version of Google for China at the behest of the Chinese government. Would Google then consider a censored version of Google for the U.S. government?
Well, what the platforms will always say is we will follow local law.
Right.
So that goes to Stacey's point, is we will be safe from a law in this country because we have a constitution still. But it probably won't reach that level. There'll be other impact. You look at, there's a story on the Times today. It says dozens at Facebook unite to challenge its intolerant liberal culture. Somebody said on Twitter when I tweeted this, well, I'm sure dozens of people have complained about there aren't enough vegetarian items in the free food line.
Actually, that's hundreds, probably thousands, maybe.
Yeah. But you have this atmosphere of what Stacey was saying, of the false balance that comes up all too easily. And, I do think there's a problem of perspective in the larger media ecosystem. And I'm liberal and I'm media and I will confess that sin on behalf of my brethren. I think it's an issue. I think it's why part of the reason we're where we are. But that has nothing to do with what Trump's doing. And the reaction that Stacey mentions of this, well, let's get a balance going. Let's get a balance going. Mean that if, Leo, what you were going to say was, are you going to balance by institution or by story? And if you're going to start balancing by story, if you're going to start balancing at all, it's wrong because Stacey's right. Have I said that enough? This is about facts and it's about legitimate, responsible, and intellectually honest reporting. But even so, if you say, okay, let me do some more right stuff. Well, the next thing line on the right stuff gets you to Breitbart really fast. Because there's not much more. There's nothing more than the Wall Street Journal and Fox.
Kara Swisher the New York Times picked a good time to add Kara Swisher to their editorial board. Her opinion piece today, Trump's ludicrous attack on big tech, the idea that Google and Twitter are rigging their platforms against him is patently false. I love her lead. Here's the truest conundrum of the social media age. Those who complain loudest about being silenced never, ever shut up. She says that Trump, instead of attacking tech, he should send them a gold embossed thank you note.
I guess because what? Because she says most tech leaders are more often lightweight versions of libertarians and largely apolitical, except for backing gay and transgender rights and wanting to allow more qualified immigrants into the country to make more tech. Otherwise, in my reporting, I found they love those tax cuts and adore the repatriated income. True, true. Mm-hmm. And can't get enough of deregulation. Sure, they don't cotton to the anti-climate change nonsense Mr. Trump spews. Of course, everybody withdrew from the tech board when he pulled out of the Paris Accords. And they can't stand the endless bullying. But let's stop to reflect that they have handed him all the weapons in his online arsenal to do that. That's what he has to be thankful for. I think you could easily make the case that Trump's election had a lot to do with Facebook. And his effective use of Facebook, or the Russians' effective use. Somebody's effective use.
Somebody else on Twitter said that you can hold these two ideas in mind at the same time. Most of the staff at Facebook is probably liberal, but that Facebook is has been better exploited by the right than the left.
I don't know. I mean, and I haven't looked at the makeup of their lobbying efforts recently, but probably 3 years ago, Facebook's lobbyists were all highly conservative, even in the Obama administration. So I don't know where that is today.
Jeff Bezos has been under attack. He just completely ignores it.
He completely ignores it.
Should Facebook and Twitter, who are not ignoring it, they're scrambling around like crazy, do the same? And what should Google do? Is the best thing
Bezos doesn't have a social network. I mean, I know that Trump's attacking him, and he did actually respond to some of the worker allegations. But, I mean, Bezos doesn't have a social network. He owns the Washington Post. So from his perspective, there is no benefit for him to speak up on any of this.
Right. And Kara's absolutely right that all of these guys have benefited from repatriation, lower tax rates, deregulation. It's all been good. So
I think, Leo, to answer your question, that the platforms would do well and wise to follow the lead of Floyd Abrams of the New York Times and say, this is a matter of the First Amendment. This is a matter of free speech. Don't tell us how to do our jobs. It's not your job to do that. We're doing our job. We're doing it well. And it is our prerogative to do it, not yours to tell us how to do it. This is a matter of the First Amendment. This is why it exists. This is why we're in this country. And media people should be right behind them saying what they say. And rather than sniping at the platforms as certain trade groups still do. I went to her today with somebody from a trade group in the publishing industry. I stand for the First Amendment, but I still want to complain about Google a lot. Enough. There's a common enemy here, and that's anybody who's against the truth is against us. And we've got to stand together here. And we've got to recognize, and I said this in the show 2 weeks ago, that whether you like it or not, our best ally against Russian election manipulation is Facebook and Twitter. That's just it.
They're
the only ones doing anything. So that's where we are.
I don't know how effective it is. I don't know how much of their heart is in doing. This is the real question, Jeff.
Yeah.
How much of their heart is in doing anything about it?
I think now it's strongly in it. I think now it is. It wasn't before. But our joint cause and concern is to protect speech and the First Amendment from this kind of authoritarian intervention. And we should be standing together.
That's true. And Google and Facebook don't want that kind of authoritarian intervention.
Right.
Because how complicated, and it's just, forget about morality and ethics. It's complicated to deal with this many policies for this many places and types of people in the world. So anything that fragments the kind of global platform is a pain for them.
One social media, Kara Swisher's last few paragraphs are probably the most telling. As one social media executive said to me recently with an audible sigh, for one set, we can't take down enough. For another, we can't leave up enough. One side thinks social media enabled populism. The other thinks the opposite. There will be no fixing this, which makes for a kind of digital gridlock that is perfect for Mr. Trump, even though he seems not to be in on the giant tech joke he has created. In an interview with Trump conducted by Mark Leibovich of the New York Times about a year ago, quote, Trump says, "They want to take away my voice," he declared plaintively, even as he bragged about the 54 million he reaches directly with every tweet on his real Donald Trump handle, along with 23 million more on at POTUS. They're not going to take away my social media. She ends the piece, no, Mr. President, they're not. So it is kind of an odd conundrum. On the one hand, he has probably the best bully pulpit of any president ever.
Bully pulpit, well titled.
Yes.
Bully pulpit.
Yeah.
That was Teddy Roosevelt.
Teddy Roosevelt.
Yeah. The best bully pulpit.
No, I said be best.
Be best.
I was referring back to anti-bullying and bullying.
Be best.
Put the anti in bully. Okay. Can we stop talking about this now? Or are we still talking?
Yeah, no, we're done.
I'm like, this is one of those things. I'm like, we could talk for hours and not make any headway.
Well, I think this was perfect. We discussed the issue. I'm glad Kara's editorial, that was actually a great way to kind of, I think, sum it up. I think we all agree with Kara on
and I should do my standing disclosure that I raised money for my school from Facebook as well as Craig Newmark and the Ford Foundation and others. I am independent of them. I received no money personally from them. End of disclosure.
Let's take a break. When we come back, Stacy will pick the first topic. I'm not going to be here for another 3 weeks after this, you know. You could pick all the topics next week. Jason Howell.
Your mind is somewhere in the Mediterranean.
Yeah, already. Yeah. I was really punchy on Windows Weekly. I mean, I've calmed down a little bit.
I was like, come back to us, Leo. Stick with us here just for a few more hours.
You need that punching thing right now, Stacy.
Our show today. Go ahead. Oh, you know, by the way, on Saturday we had a robot maker on, and she said, oh, yeah, I could do that.
Did you have Simone?
Jillian of Let's Robot.tv.
Oh, also exciting. I'll have to check that out.
It's kind of Twitch for internet-controlled robots.
Ooh.
So if you go to Let's Robot.tv... You can watch robots being controlled over the internet.
You better buy a helmet, Leo.
And so if I go to her page, which is letsrobot.tv/robocaster/Jill. So she says she has a bunch of robots, but she can build a robot that I guess nothing's really active right now, but... see, I can control it up here, but she can build a robot that you can punch me.
Oh, excellent. I found a friend of mine named Hugo is also volunteered to build one. He's the CEO over at Electric Imp. So he was like, I'll build you one.
Jill said when she first started this, she was doing it on Twitch, and she built a slapping robot, and people paid on Twitch to slap her. She got 300 whatever the Twitch bucks are in one day.
I believe that. I'm surprised.
How much would you pay, Stacy, to punch Leo when he says something nasty?
You know what? I actually wouldn't pay anything. I could just hang up. But I wonder how much the audience would pay to be like, no, Leo. Or even no Jeff or no Stacy. I mean, we should make it fair.
That's true. I mean, we have to have these installed in our homes.
Yeah, who'd be like, Jeff, no, or Stacy, stop talking. So it could happen.
Our show today brought to you by Cashfly. If you are running a internet controlled robot site or a podcast site, or if you deliver content in any way to your customers, you need to know about CDNs, content delivery networks, and our CDN, the best, which is Cashfly. We've been on Cashfly for almost a decade, literally without flaw. And I asked Cashfly what our bandwidth for Twig. For this week in Google alone, last month, 771.8 gigabytes on Cashfly. We do petabytes a month for the network as a whole. All flawlessly. If you get this podcast, if you subscribe and you get it fast, if you watch it download on the webpage, that's Cashfly. Cashfly's been building trusted CDN relationships since 2002. They eliminate outages with they guarantee 100% availability with their bulletproof 100% SLA. But it's more than just that. They've got a great team. Matt Levine and his team are so good. Smart, easy to talk to. Techies that when you call will answer your questions the first time without having to pass you around to five different departments. I will vouch for that. And what I really love is it's much more affordable. It's you will save on average more than 20%. Say goodbye to logging in a couple of times a week or even every day, trying to figure out, how much is this going to cost me at the end of the month? 20%. Just imagine what you could do with 20% in the time when you don't have to micromanage your usage or worry about having to commit to a long-term contract based on a growth plan you didn't even write. That's a crazy way to buy CDN. We would not exist without CashFly. We host all our podcasts on CashFly, audio and video. As I said, for this show alone, 771.8 gigabits, I think gigabytes of throughput on CashFly, petabytes every month. Join the thousands of others who, like me, trust CashFly's reliable network. There's a few of them right there. Hey, we're on that page right next to Ars Technica and Adobe, Blue Shell and Overdrive. There's Twit. That's nice. I have an offer for Twit listeners. If you go to twit.cashfly.com, you can get a complimentary detailed analysis of your current CDN bill and usage trends. They will give you, honestly, a quote for how much they could save you. You might be leaving as much as 20% on the table. I know we save a lot. Twit.cashfly.com. Twit.cashfly.com. Thank you, CashFly. Thank you, Matt and team. You guys are the greatest. Stacy, have you been thinking what you want to talk about next?
Oh, yes. Yes, I have.
You get to pick.
I'm like, have I mentioned that I'm going on vacation tomorrow?
Are you? Where are you going?
Oh. I'm going to Banff. So.
Oh, what a good time. You go to Lake Louise.
I did. This is that was family. Oh, and I have news. This is kind of early news. Do you guys want early news? And then we'll talk about Google again.
About you?
It is about me. We, in June.
You better not be moving to Banff.
We're moving to Seattle.
Oh, congratulations.
War.
Wow. So, yes, that is our plan. So
you had so much fun there this summer, you decided to move there.
I've been pushing it for years. Finally, my husband said, yes, let's do it.
Because you can work. You're not taking a job there. You're going to continue to do what you're doing, right?
I am going to continue what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Doing what I'm doing.
That's the beauty of what we do. You can do it anywhere.
Exactly. As long as there's broadband.
Yeah.
Go broadband.
And does your husband have a job in Austin or is he just
He's a similar type of job.
Oh,
he does.
Okay.
Well, he has a job. He does lots of jobs, but they're not location.
He can do them anywhere.
Yes.
So what was his resistance? You have family down there.
It's hard to move for no reason. Well, other than you want to, especially when you're moving from a cheaper place to a more expensive place.
That's true.
Yeah. And you got to pick up a kid.
That's the thing. Now's the time to do that.
Deal with their grousing.
Your daughter is young enough that it won't be a real disruption. Is she going? Will she be in fifth grade, fourth grade?
Oh, no. She's
third grade.
She's in seventh grade right now.
Seventh. So she'll be changed. So she'll be going to a new eighth. Oh, that is tough.
That's a little tough.
I was hoping she was going from 6 to 7 or 8 to 9.
No. And we thought about going another year, but dang it. It's hot here.
It is. Notice, by the way, that's when people say we're moving, is in August in Austin.
Well, yeah, and, maybe we won't be able to do it, but why not take the chance?
Yeah. So. Stacy, no more queso for you. Oh,
yeah, that is actually on it. We have a list of pros and cons, and queso is a part of it.
Oh, my God.
Queso, Tex-Mex technically made the list, but... You know.
I bet you'll find good Tex-Mex up there.
No.
See, they have good interior mix. We'll see.
Oysters.
Look who's in the chat room, Kevin C. Toefel. He's shocked.
Hey, Kevin.
Shocked to hear this news.
Oh, no, we talked about it. Oh. I wasn't going to tell you guys for another several months, but I was like, since I was caught out doing something related to that, I was like, okay. So here's my pitch for our story. It's a broadband story because, I love my FCC. Ars Technica just put out a story this afternoon about saying the FCC can define markets with only one ISP now as competitive.
What?
According, this is an Ars Technica thing. This is from the, I'm trying to read which, U.S. Appeals Court for the 8th Circuit.
Oh, no.
So
there was a competitive market test that existed.
Yes.
And this was challenged in court
by the CLECs.
So CLEX are who? They're the phone companies, right?
They're the competitive local exchange carriers. So they're the not Ma Bells. The not Bells.
And purchasers of business broadband. Because the FCC voted last year to eliminate price caps on some business broadband providers like AT&T and Verizon. In any given county, if 50% of potential customers are within half a mile of a location served by a competitive provider, you just move. You move. It's only half a mile.
So we discussed this because this is a huge thing. These are, I call these broadband black holes. And it's, we see this, our policy for decades has been to ignore these issues. And there's a couple ways. So there's this particular example. There's also with the national broadband map where you don't actually get address level information for who has broadband and what they have. You grab zip level information. So it's possible for you to be in an area that's competitive, but still only have one provider.
Because you're both in the same zip. Yeah. That happens all the time, by the way.
Yes. This is, I mean, I could probably call 10 people and at least one of them will be currently right now having this problem.
Right. So I'm in a zip code that theoretically has two or more internet service providers, but I only have one that will serve my house or my business.
And this is one of those issues where, you know, broadly, it doesn't sound terrible, but individually, it's horrific. And like I just said, you cannot do business today without having a broadband connection. I would argue you can't live as a consumer without it, but, you know, there are people who do. Personally, I think it's a problem, but, you know, some people don't want it. And this is just so messed up. So nothing to do with Google, but a really frustrating issue. We still don't have a solution for it. We may never. I'm hopeful. And 5G, by the way, will not solve this necessarily.
No.
Because you can't, in a lot of areas where it's a real problem, like in rural areas, 5G isn't necessarily going to be able to go out that far. So that's all. This was my story because broadband. Sadness.
Yeah, we just, it's really amazing. You would think that the FCC, of all people, would represent the people.
Oh, really?
And try to get an equitable situation for people in the United States who are suffering with among the worst broadband in the developed world because of anti-competitive pressures from, you know, these duopolies created admittedly by the FCC at the behest of the cable and phone companies. But you would think this is a government agency that they would be trying to make internet access easier, more available, less costly, all of the things which are good for society.
Have you not heard of regulatory capture? And I would argue, actually, here's where these things break down is most. In the tech world, most companies who are like, I have a cool service. I want to get more people to use it so I can sell more of my service. Think of Intel and Silicon, like chips. Think of Amazon and cloud services. So the telcos, though, that is not their mindset. The quote-unquote IT mindset is absolutely not theirs. They don't want to give you more of things that use their product. They don't necessarily want you to like view their product as a platform on which to grow businesses because they want to treat their product as this high-priced, super valuable thing. And it is where it's basically like when Moore's Law meets the telcos.
Everything goes to hell.
We all lose.
The judges basically accepted the FCC's argument that the impact of a competitor, even if the competitor is not actually competing, but if a competitor is within half a mile, that assures reasonably competitive outcomes in the medium term. As long as they're close.
So absurd. That's like saying you live in America and Canada has Rogers and you're next to it, so it's okay.
Right. Or, yeah. I mean, and this is...
The FCC did not even attempt to show that this is true. The judges... They just said it was, and the judges said, all right, well, you're the FCC. You say so, so it must be true.
Well, and the FCC can't prove it because, and the problem is also on the flip side, the consumer groups can't prove it either because we don't actually have access to that data. Mm. But because the telcos say that address level, who gets what data is competitive to them. So if AT&T, if like AT&T's exact service footprint were available as a public record, everyone could see it and everyone would know, and then AT&T just loses its competitive edge. I think that is, I think the policy needs for understanding who and where broadband is outweigh their competitive concerns, especially given that they only have one competitor in most markets.
The judges basically say that both sides, neither side has data. So both sides are applying an economic theory. Mm-hmm. And the judges say the FCC can rationally choose whatever evidence it wants to believe among conflicting evidence. And we're not going to get in the way.
Who bothers with truth?
Truth is not truth. They can believe whatever they want to because they're the FCC.
It's our world today.
Oh, Lord.
Thanks for depressing us, Stacey.
All right. Cheer up.
Thanks a lot.
Cheer up. Google France is taking down its Google Plus page.
No, that's so French. Even at Google, the French are the French.
And they're saying, follow us on Twitter or Facebook. Is it the beginning of the end of Google Plus? It is in France. I have to say, I did disconnect from all my big-time social media this week. I killed my Twitter account, killed Instagram.
Oh, Jesus.
Killed Facebook.
Leo.
I killed Tumblr. I even killed Tumblr, but I didn't bother to kill Google Plus because who cares?
You were terrible.
I even killed Tumblr, but I didn't kill Google Plus. Should I kill Google Plus too? No, why bother? You can't kill Google Plus because you have a Google account. You can't. So, I'm going to do something. I'm going to send postcards. Anybody wants a postcard, I'll mail you one. I think it's a more civilized way to share information.
Dear Jeff Jarvis, the road to here was so long, and we lost four of our children to the measles.
Exactly. It's the Donner Party. Oregon Trail. Let's see. Google has confirmed.
I want a new show.
Why? I didn't quit
this
Google.
This week in Techno Panic.
It's not Techno Panic. It's not even. No. I'm not even advocating it. I quit it because it's a river of sewage coming into my brain. And I just, I thought, maybe I could just turn that off. Oh, look. It worked. What I did do, I'm going to confess, is I had a Twitter account lying around that's just news sources. So, because there is a value to having a news feed, right? So I carefully curated just news, just reliable, unfake news sources. And so if somebody, somebody dead or something, was there an earthquake? If something like that happens, I can go there. So I admit it's not completely withdrawing from Twitter, but it's not like I'm going, oh my God, what'll I do? It's like, yay.
I use Twitter through lists.
Yeah, I have lists.
I have a Trump Watcher list and a Media Wonks list.
Those aren't the lists I'm looking for, but I have lists like tech news, stuff like
that. That's what the thing. Yeah. But you pick who you want on it, and then you read, and it's fine.
Yeah, but I don't need the rest of it.
You didn't get the rest of it.
But if you use your list, you don't. But if you don't use your list, what do you get?
Right, so use the list, and then it's fine.
Or just kill your account.
Okay. You're never going to agree. Just Leo, corner, Jeff, corner.
River of sewage. Bill Donahue, reporter at Law 360, says
Phil Google, Donahue? Oh, Bill Donahue.
Bill Donahue. Phil Donahue. Whatever happened to Phil Donahue? Phil Donahue. Bill Donahue says Google has confirmed for me the company will indeed appeal the ruling in Oracle versus Google to the Supreme Court. This is the case that Google lost. The court ruled that Google's use of Java, and actually, no, I apologize. Google's use of the Java API, Oracle owns Java, was not fair use. And so anyway, we'll see. We don't know if the Supreme Court will hear it, but it is a significant issue in the fair use doctrine, as well as software copyrights, if you ask me. Although I think it was stipulated that software copyrights are legal. So that's why they went to the fair use defense. Nothing more to say. Just.
Oh, good. Because I saw that and I was like, oh, gosh, This case will A, never end, and B, I have to remember everything I learned the first time.
Well, remember, it's it's very complicated. It was very complicated. It isn't a case of whether Google stole Java. It's a case of whether Google could legally, using the fair use rules, use a copyrighted API. It was even agreed that the API was copyrightable, which I thought was very odd. That didn't seem right at all, but that's a done deal. That's over. Here's something maybe the president would consider. If you put a little Google Home. Oh, and we already talked about this last week. Darn it.
Oh, you did? Okay, sorry. I put that one in there. I wasn't here.
This is part of the changelog. I brought back the changelog while you were gone.
No, you did, but you did it before.
Oh, okay.
I was here reentry.
Yeah, that's right.
There is a Google Home story.
I was going to tell about the good news thing, just so people know what I was talking about. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, wait, but we did good news.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. That's what
we did it last week. Is that the one you were going to bring up too?
I couldn't listen to the show last week.
No,
I was going to bring up a different Google Assistant story. But
give me that
smaller
one.
Story.
Give me that one.
So your Nest by Yale Lock now works with Google Assistant in theory.
What is the Nest by Yale Lock?
What? You don't know about the Nest by Yale Lock? Leo.
Is that related to Nest?
It is. It is a connected door lock that's part of the Nest ecosystem. It is made by Yale. It is actually a lovely lock. It's $239, I believe.
It's pretty.
And it is, it's actually an attractive looking lock. I have it installed. It works. But it has not actually been integrated into the Google Home yet until
today.
Possibly today. But it's not working yet because Kevin tried it. And then later after Kevin failed, I also tried it. So I don't know if I'm just having issues because I have had issues connecting things to Google Home from my Nest account. Or if it's just hadn't rolled out to me yet.
Well, as long as we're talking, you can also use the Amazon Spot to use your Ring video camera. Ring is a sponsor. And your Nest cameras and even your Wyze cameras. So people don't like the Spot because it's watching you, but now you can watch them while they're watching you or something.
Take that.
Ha-ha.
Crazy.
So another story, related story from my numbers.
Yes.
I always have extras.
Oh, good.
Is the Google Home, according to one analyst, Google Home is out shipping Echo.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting?
It is. And at IFA, Google Home, they say, is everywhere, is on everything.
Well, that's just a function of Google's marketing. And I will still tell you, from every single connected device maker that I talk to, their priorities in integration are Madam A first.
Right.
So the Amazon Echo first, followed by Google, followed by IFT.
Yeah, that's IFT is in there. Huh? That's interesting. Because they see IFT kind of is if this, then that is a glue for all of them.
Maybe, or they just, there's enough early, because we're still at a fairly early adopter stage for most of these. Oh, yeah. So,
true.
Yeah. In early adopters like IFT, because it's a powerful tool that lets you use things.
Super powerful. Harman Kardon has announced a new Google Assistant speaker. It's only $600.
Jeez.
$600. But it's about the size of the Google Home Max, right? This is another IFA thing. It'll be available for pre-order in Europe only at the end of September. I'm not sure when it'll come to the United States.
Leo and I are old enough to remember that even in our dorm rooms, we had to get like 5 or 10 speakers to put them all around the room and up and down and everywhere because that was the only way to do
it. Did you have quadraphonic?
No, I missed that. I missed that. I did not do it. I'm sure.
Wasn't that
did.
Something by The Who?
Quadrophenia, which was actually interestingly. No, I better not go into this. But there was a joystick, right? And they could swirl the sound around.
Yeah. Oh, it was the only way to really understand the sound.
Yeah, quadraphonic.
My next-door neighbor in the dorm had it and drove me completely batty. He had to blast it to show the ladies how wonderful his stereo was.
Ladies, my stereo's bigger than Jarvis's. Come over here. The Citation 500 has a 200-watt stereo speakers. That's a lot. And can support 24-bit. 96 kilohertz high quality sound. That's a high bit rate streaming. And then it's a speaker, there, and then it has the assistant as well for control. So it's not just for the Google Assistant. It's the third smart speaker. I didn't realize this in the Harman Kardon set. Oh, wait a minute. Yeah, I have the Harman Kardon that's based on Cortana.
Yeah. How's that going? How often do you use that?
Oh, Jesus.
It's kind of pathetic sitting there on the desk unplugged. It's sad.
It's well integrated with your Google Plus.
Yeah.
You know, I actually have a Google Mini that every time I go out of town, it's in our bathroom.
Yeah.
Every time I go out of town, it disappears. And when I come back, I find it, plug it back in.
Yeah.
So
I put cameras all around the house for while we're gone. And they, oddly enough, they're all face down this morning.
Yeah. Go figure.
Every one of them face down. So I put them back up. We'll see. I need a camera that can get, can write itself.
You know, oh, like a little.
Like that robot. We had a soccer playing robot in here on Sunday. That if it would sometimes miss the ball, kick, and kind of hysterically fall over. But it's actually great when it does that, because then it does this weird and stands up on its own.
Oh, awesome. So it's like the beginning of the sand.
When I used the Wyze camera for the cat to find out how it was peeing, it was doing the. Of course, the cat was freaked by it and batted at it.
Yeah. I have video of that happening as well. Cats love the Wyze Cam. Did you know that as of 2011, Google was still backing up Gmail on tape?
Isn't that amazing?
And that doesn't surprise me. Yeah.
Saved their rump.
In 2011, this is from the IEEE Spectrum. For example,
I write for them.
Do you?
Uh-huh.
That's a great geeky column. Boy, that's geek cred. If you write a column for them, that is geek cred. Wow.
I wrote one piece for them once.
That's awesome. I wrote I just wrote a piece for the AARP magazine. Does that count?
How to go on cruises.
That's a geezer cred, I guess.
2011, a flaw in a software update caused Google to accidentally delete the saved email messages in about 40,000 Gmail accounts. This loss occurred despite there being several copies of the data stored on hard drives across multiple data centers. Fortunately, the data was also recorded on tape, and Google eventually restored all the lost data from that backup.
Can we bet that it's not stored on tape anymore?
Well, wait, actually. So Facebook started doing their cold storage research. So this is, I mean, because tape is, guys, it's reliable. It's cheap as anything.
It's just
so
slow.
So it makes it.
So this would be like Amazon Glacier. Cold storage is, you know, there's hot storage, which is like S3, and there's cold storage like Glacier. And yeah, why not use tape for cold storage? Why not?
Well, no. Tape and cold storage are different. So, but cold storage, the cold storage efforts by Facebook and Amazon, they didn't come out until they started researching those in like, probably earlier, but they didn't start like doing much with it until like 2014, maybe 2013. So you got to remember in 2012 or 2011 when this happened, they didn't have anything like that.
No,
so you had
this is what they had. This is actually the tape machine that they were using.
And yes, someone points out that tape does degrade very fast, although it's about 20, 30 years. I believe.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is you're kind of refreshing it all the time. And I'm sure they don't just take all of Gmail, put it on one tape and put it in the closet. It's not like that.
Somewhere in my emails from 2005 or
I mean,
and when did Gmail come out? I know they just had a birthday, or I think they just had a birthday. When did that happen?
Oh, at least like 12 years old, right? Let's see.
Okay. Oh, I muted it. That's right.
That's like that's what happens in my house all the time.
Gmail was launched April Fool's 2004, and it was in beta for 5 years. Remember that? I remember in 2004, you had to get an invitation to get a Gmail account, and people were selling their invitations on eBay.
So, yeah, I can't tell you my husband's email, but it's a wonderful Gmail, because he actually was doing, like, he was a affiliate of Google's. They 1 year they sent us a TV. They got us it. So I had an early Gmail account because
Andy at gmail.com.
It is not that. Poor Andy. But yes.
There's a guy who has Jim at AOL.com, but he can't use it because it's completely swamped by spam. I have Laporte at Gmail. I actually had to abandon it because it's just not, I get too many French spam messages.
Oh, but the French spam messages are the best.
I know, they're pretty funny. Then I also get a lot of things like in French, like your appointment is confirmed and stuff, because people who are named Laporte, they put their first name space Laporte at gmail.com, and I get the mail, not them. I stopped for a while, I was like, I'm sorry, I'm not Amy Laporte, I'm not Jacques Laporte, and I finally just gave up. That is a great story. I bet you they're still using tape.
Oh yeah, everybody's still using tape.
Everybody is? Really?
Okay, they say in journalism and also any true false test, everybody, never, always. Okay, a lot of people are still using tape.
Many
people and companies.
Oh no!
What?
Sorry to go back to a prior story. Trump just put up a meme. I don't know if I want to show it
on his Twitter.
Yeah, video.
Gosh, it's too bad I don't have a Twitter account.
Don't pay attention to him. Stop.
Oh yes, let's stop. Let's not do it. If somebody wants to go, they can go.
Oh, my dog just barked at you, Jeff. She even agrees. She's like, no meme for you. Okay, now I feel like a mean person, but
I don't even remember his Twitter handle anymore. So
nope, stop. You're feeding him.
Don't do it. Stacey's right, as always.
So you,
as ever,
we talked last week about the Pixel 3 and all the videos and leaks. We found out, or apparently, according to 9to5 Google, they found out where all of those were coming from. There's a Ukrainian black market dealer who somehow got his hands on quite a few.
See, it's the Russians. Everything is the Russians.
No,
across the border from Russia to Ukraine.
Ukraine is not Russia, dude. Although,
I know what I'm saying. It's right there. I bet it goes back. Yeah. It's fake
Although,
news.
Although a lot of those teaser videos were showing Russian interfaces in Cyrillic. So this seller is offering, apparently, I don't know, stolen Pixel 3 XLs for $2,000 each.
Where does he get them?
He already has his hand.
Well, you better believe Google's and Hon Hai are wondering, Foxconn, where? But probably that's where, right? They're making them in China. Somebody's snarfing them up, sneaking them out of the factory.
Oh, I see.
Ooh, that is no bueno. Mm-hmm. Oh, this was an interesting story for everybody who paid attention to the study on Facebook causing anti-refugee attacks in Germany.
Yes. There's a Nutella connection, I hear.
Mm-hmm.
explain this to me, Stacey.
I enjoyed putting that one on there.
I was wondering where that was from. No, was I'm sitting here reading it, so I'm sorry.
Okay.
So
here is the introductory correlations. Anti-refugee posts, that's the dotted line, correlated with anti-refugee incidents. Look at the strong correlation between the two incidents. And so Ben Thompson at who else? Ben Thompson at Stratechery. He focused on a quotation from the authors. In our setting, the share of a municipality's population that use the AFD Facebook page is an intuitive proxy for right-wing social media use. However, it is also correlated with differences in a host of observable municipality characteristics. Most importantly, the prevalence of right-wing ideology. We thus attempt to isolate the local component of social media usage that is uncorrelated with right-wing ideology by drawing on the number of users on the Nutella Germany page. With over 32 million likes, Nutella has one of the most popular Facebook pages in Germany and therefore provides a measure of general Facebook media use at the municipality level. So
basically their benchmark for their statistical accuracy is based on
Nutella.
How many people liked Nutella?
But
because
Nutella. Nutella is the normative.
Yes. Which I think Nutella is disgusting. So I'm like, really?
Yeah, only fascists like Nutella, right, Stacey?
Mm.
Yes, that is well, that clearly might be a correlation.
That'll
Leo will get the tweets now. I will.
You see, again, my strategy is turning out to be genius. Genius.
No Nutella defenders for you.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a good time to pitch one of my favorite books of all time that will help everyone. And it's called A Mathematician Reads the Newspaper.
Oh,
it's very dry.
I thought you were going to say Weapons of Math Destruction.
No, this is another good one. This is written for journalists.
Ah.
So this is written for people who don't like math in general. So it's a lovely book, and I highly recommend it for people who want to be, you know, a little bit smarter. There are equations. You don't have to deal with the equations. You can
just
skip right
over. Allen. It's available.
Is it still
journalists are notoriously. Yes.
Oh, it's John Allen Paulos. I know him. I know John Allen Paulos. He wrote Innumeracy, which is another wonderful book.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I actually have interviewed him. Nice. Yeah.
Yeah.
I talked to him.
Tell your friends.
When Innumeracy came out. Yeah. He likens innumeracy to illiteracy, except with numbers.
Yes.
Oh, nice.
And in this, he gives wonderful examples. He talks about how scientific papers and pollsters and all sorts of people, like, remember the study about how alcohol will kill you? A drink a day is going to kill you. You know, if you look at the actual statistics,
it's not as much fun, though, Stacey.
I know. I'm just saying that. You know, the first thing when that came out, I found somebody who actually reported the data. And then I was like, read that. And I was like, oh, okay, I don't need to panic.
Truthiness through statistics, as Midwest in our chat room says. Would you like to, do we have a change log today? I believe we do.
Oh, we do.
Oh, yes. I am, it's not easy.
The Google change log.
It takes some time to find new stuff from Google, because back in the day when Gina Trapani was doing this, Google seemed to be running out new stuff all the time. They haven't really as much. But here is the 10th Doodle for Google winner. Okay. Okay, I'm telling you, it's not easy doing a changelog every week.
For those listening... How do you describe this Google Doodle?
Well, maybe if I explain that Google asked students to respond to the theme of what inspires me. And the winner, first grader Sarah Gomez Lane. I'll give you Google's description of it. Delightful dinosaurs to highlight her dream of becoming a paleontologist. She was the K-3 finalist and the Virginia State winner. And we asked, Google writes, how she felt upon hearing she was a finalist. She exclaimed she was surprised. Her advice to students interested in submitting to future Doodle for Google contests, try your best and have fun. She's the first on the left in the front. This big award ceremony. June 18th at Google. Okay, I'm sure I have some other things in the changelog. Actually, this is a serious one. There are a lot of veterans working at Google, not a surprise. And Google has decided to help U.S. veterans find jobs to suit their skills by adding a new search term, search jobs for veterans in Google, and you can use your military job code, MOSAFSCNEC, to narrow down the job listings to those needing the skills you honed in the military. So there's a new jobs for veterans search term. I think that's a really nice thing.
Helping
veterans make their next move in civilian life. And the blog post came from Matthew Hudson, who's a program manager at Google Cloud. For 7 years, I served in the Air Force as a civil engineer. My job was to make sure our bases, like the ones in Iraq and Afghanistan, where I did 3 tours of duty, were technologically and logistically prepared for my fellow servicemen and women to do their duty in defense of our country. I think that's awesome. I think it's really awesome. Let's see. So there you go. There's something good. Google Go search for emerging markets can now read website content out loud.
I'm excited by this one. This is the Google Go is the lighter version of Android. And it is for developing markets, but what I think is potentially true here is a redefining of the definition of literacy. Literacy in the, get ready for your drinks, folks, Gutenberg era was all text-based.
Right.
And now literacy can also be oral, and you can hear. And I think that there's an opportunity. So it's going to make web pages more accessible to more people. And yes, folks, it's an effort to expand the internet into new places and get new people on and make more money for them. Of course, that's the way the world operates. But I think it's a good thing. I think it brings information and knowledge to more people.
Hindi, English, and other, actually 28 supported languages. And what's cool is it reads the text on the page and highlights the word as it's going. So it is, in fact, I think, a way to teach real literacy.
I didn't see that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or, I'm sorry. Did I say real literacy?
Yes, you said real literacy. Yeah.
Gutenbergian literacy. actually, it's interesting because these are basically, the Google Go is supposed to run on pretty simple, low-cost phones. So the fact that they can do this is impressive.
I would imagine it's local.
Yeah, I would think so because you can't count on bandwidth either, right?
Oh, right.
And, we're down to the the last item on the Google changelog. If you use Gboard, and I know a lot of you do on your Google device, I guess you could use Gboard on an iPhone, too. Google's now offering mini stickers, emojis it creates from your selfies. The feature uses a combination of machine learning, neural networks, and artist illustrations to conjure up the best representation of you. Can you get my... I left my Pixel on the desk. I should be showing this. Taking into account various characteristics like skin tone, hair color, style, eye color, face shape, and facial hair. The sticker pack... Oh, here's an animation you can see. Creates 100 sticker styles based on your personalized avatar with bold or sweet modes. Do you want... Which... I'm thinking Stacy's bold and Jeff is sweet.
Aww.
It's not out yet. That's why I want to check on my Pixel 2. Gboard version 7.5 just came out. So let me just see if I can do this. Because I do use Gboard. I like Gboard. Let me send a message to somebody. I'll send one to my lovely wife. Now, how do I make it? Let me watch the video. what is she doing? Okay, it's creating the mini. Okay. Customize. That's bold or sweet. Okay. So you pick stickers. Okay. And then, I don't think I have it yet. I don't see a create. No. But you will at some point, maybe. We all will. Google, look for Gboard 7.5. And that... It's the changelog, such as it is. Not, I admit, the most exciting. But sometimes there's nothing to say. Our show today brought to you by, now this I'm excited about, Masterclass. I am a big fan of Masterclass. Have we talked about Masterclass on this show before?
We have indeed, and big fans.
Yeah. So Masterclass is, takes this idea of online learning, but gives you the most amazing teachers you've ever heard of. There's world chess champion Garry Kasparov teaching chess, or Annie Leibovitz teaching photography, Steph Curry teaching you how to dunk. And these are, by the way, shot beautifully. Ron Howard, Opie, did you know he's a director now? He teaches direction. And look how they do this. I mean, they're really showing the shots. They're showing the angles. They're showing you exactly what a professional, real director does. I love it that people like Ron Howard, who certainly doesn't need the money, actually asked the masterclass. I mean, people, how do you get these amazing people to do your classes? They said, because they want to pay it forward, because they actually like the idea of teaching people what they know.
The role of the director.
So stage a scene awesome.
And let you watch me work with the actors and action.
I thought today was a huge improvement.
Are you nuts?
Play to each other. Are you nuts?
Okay.
You know, a beat of looking this way. Okay. Have the courage to...
How'd you like to learn how to act from Samuel L. Jackson? This is my other favorite one. I always pull this one up because I love it. He walks actors through a scene in Pulp Fiction, bit by bit, and helps them understand... the motivation, what's going on.
Personality quirks that are result. We're going to do this iconic scene from Pulp Fiction. When you're at home preparing, you break down what he's trying to convey. The person he's speaking to and to the audience. The truth is.
Now, some people would want to watch this because they want to become actors. But frankly, I just find this amazingly entertaining.
What is he saying? I'm the evil of the world, and I have dominion over you.
Isn't that awesome? Look at some of the people. Now, we have a deal for you that you're going to love. You can unlock every masterclass for a year. Steve Martin teaching comedy. By the way, it's just fun to watch because he's funny.
Hi, I'm... Quiet. I'm Steve Martin, and welcome to Masterclass.
He's just awesome. Go to masterclass.com/twig. You can unlock every masterclass for a year. Unlimited access. Over 35 world-class masters with more all the time, all for one surprisingly low annual price. I think originally when they started this, they figured, oh, well, people will be interested in just one thing, like, oh, you want to learn how to cook, so you're going to watch the Wolfgang Puck, cooking class. But I think that the way I use it is exactly how people use it. It's just great. It's just fun. I don't want to be a chef, but I love hearing Wolfgang Puck talk about how he thinks about cooking.
Gonna teach you many different recipes, presentation, how to really make something happen.
I'm never gonna cook like Puck. So I'm never gonna play tennis like Serena Williams.
That's for sure.
But I love watching these. Masterclass.com/twig. Incidentally, this would be a great gift. A great gift for a young person. I was gonna give this. Henry's birthday was yesterday, his 24th birthday. I was gonna give it to him. He said, I already have it, Dad. He bought it for himself. Okay, all right. Every class includes video lessons, but also workbooks, even office hours where you can submit your questions. I can't sing the praises highly enough. There's an app you can get on the iPhone or the iPad. You can also do it on the web. Go to masterclass.com/twig. Ken Burns teaching documentary filmmaking. Chris Hadfield, Commander Hadfield, teaching space exploration. I don't think I'm going to Mars, but if I were, man, I'd be taking Chris with me.
Else but the moment that you're in. Study every system on a spaceship and then boil it down to what I call a one-pager.
So really, this is as much a document. Honestly, I think these are just great documentaries. Beautifully shot. Great information, but they're also classes. Masterclass.com/twig. I'm sorry, I could go on and on just showing clips from this. It's so much fun. Here's Annie Leibovitz teaching photography.
They should do one with you. How to podcast.
They haven't asked. And I'm not standing by the phone waiting for the call. Masterclass.com/twig. It's my kind of, I don't know. I think if you watch some of our shows, you probably are the kind of person that would love this. Mm-hmm. It's my kind of thing. I guess we could talk about this Fortnite installer thing. Now Tim Sweeney, the CEO of Fortnite, is blaming Google for the fact that their launcher could be used for malware. Actually, it's an interesting question. So we've talked about this before. Fortnite decided to bypass the Google Play Store, something they couldn't do on Apple. They've made $150 million on the Apple Play Store for this game, this Battle Royale game on iOS. $150 million. Well, they didn't make that much. That's how much revenue came in. Apple took a third. So they only made $100 million. So when it came time to go on Android, they thought, well, we don't have to go through the Play Store like Apple makes us. So they did a sideload, which at the time I thought, boy, you're jeopardizing your user's security so you can make more money. That the optics of that, if nothing else, are bad. Well, now, and as we mentioned last week, it turned out that the Fortnite installer they initially put out allowed a kind of a app-in-the-middle attack. It was a two-part download. The first part allowed any app on your phone to download a malicious app. Google disclosed. Epic Games says that's irresponsible. They're doing it because they're mad at us because we didn't go through the store.
You know, I know I tend to side with the platforms. On this one, I'm siding with Google, too, because, go around us and
I think that they needed to do this because it was a live vulnerability. Epic fixed
it. It was already out.
Yeah, Epic fixed it within 2 hours. Normally, what would have happened is there's a 90-day responsible disclosure window where Google would go to Epic, say, before we publish this, and they probably should have done this, before we publish this, we're going to give you a chance to fix it. Since it only took them 2 hours, Google's security team, apparently, according to the Register, turned down Epic's 90-day request to publish the information 1 week after the patch. Oh, well, the patch was already out. Okay. Google did report the issue to Epic, which immediately started working on a patch, put one out 1 day later. 2 hours after informing Google it had published the fix, Epic's security team asked Google to delay publication of the issue report for 90 days. Oh. Why would they want to wait 90 days after the patch was out? Google published 1 week after the patch. I'm not sure what's going on. It feels like Google's trying to do the best thing for its users.
I think so.
That'd be my guess.
And a little bit of Schadenfreude here, like, yeah. Told you.
It's exactly why we thought it was a bad idea.
Yeah. We're here to protect users. And when you have users sideload stuff and you make millions of users do that, you're making millions of small, you know, young, unsophisticated users vulnerable.
Now, here's one that Google doesn't look so good on. We talked before about the privacy issue. A research paper published by Professor Douglas Schmidt of Vanderbilt University says that Android sucks 10 times more private data from you than your iPhone
does. But how do you come up with a multiple like that? You know, showing me naked versus, you know, 10 times you put my location in.
That's a good point.
Which one is 10 times worse?
I mean, I don't think
the data
points
are not the issue.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. Okay.
It's a qualitative issue. I don't know. It could be worse. I don't know. But don't argue with it quantitatively. Argue with it qualitatively. What's more harm to you?
Right. Yeah, you're right. 10 times. But I have to think that Apple doesn't suck as much of your private data in general. I don't know. That's a good question.
Stacey, your mic's off.
Oh, that's why she's so quiet.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
I thought we were just boring you.
No. She thought we were ignoring her. No, Stacey, we were not.
I couldn't hear you.
Just playing the strong, silent type.
No, my dog had started barking while you were talking, Jeff, and I wanted it to not be.
Yes. Dog has
Is he scolding
taste.
Me again?
Yep.
No. Family just came home.
What is going to be a running theme. Did you want to say something about this?
I just forgot. Oh, my gosh. This is just terrible.
All right. I got one. Remember IGTV? Remember that?
Nope.
Instagram TV? It was like a month ago.
Oh, that.
What happened?
It's still there. Is that the boomerang thing?
No. It's the one where creators are supposed to make long form up to 2 hour videos.
Right.
On a special application, horizontal, vertical videos on a special application, not Instagram, but IGTV. John Constein running on TechCrunch a couple of days ago. Instagram has never truly failed at anything, but judging by modest initial view counts, IGTV could get stuck with a reputation as an abandoned theater if the company isn't careful.
It's kind of like IG Plus.
Yeah. 2 months after IGTV's launch, Facebook is not saying anything about uptake. It's a new Kevin Systrom, the founder and CEO at Instagram. And I like Kevin a lot, and I love Instagram, even though I just dumped it. It's a new format. It's different. We have to wait for people to adopt it, and that takes time. The problem is you've got all these creators who are deciding, should I take the energy and time to make something on IGTV, or should I just put it on YouTube or even just Instagram? And if there aren't a lot of views, they're just going to walk away.
Yeah, creating a marketplace is terrible, whether it's a marketplace for content or just, you know.
Here's Sensor Tower data. Starting June 18th when IGTV came out, weekly installs, kind of a precipitous drop.
It's hard. I mean, how many apps do you have on your phone?
Yeah. Yeah, it is
actually
hard.
You're a terrible example for this.
I have thousands. But I have three less now that I've dumped Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, and Tumblr. Four less. All right. I won't say any. I'll stop talking about it. I'm just.
They're going to send you. Let me track how many emails they send you asking for you to come back.
No. Really? You think I will get some?
I get email. Like, I just stopped using it, and I get so many emails.
I stopped reading emails, so.
And they get increasingly more desperate. They're like, Stacy, you haven't been on Instagram in a while. Stacy, what can we do to bring you back to Instagram?
This is an app I might get. We should have added this to the changelog. It's not from Google. It's from NASA. NASA Selfies. The NASA Selfies app lets you generate snapshots of yourself in a virtual spacesuit posing in front of gorgeous cosmic locations like the Orion Nebula or the center of the Milky Way. Just snap a photo of yourself, pick your background, and share on social media. iOS and Android.
Should have sent it to you beforehand, so you could have already done your selfies.
Yeah. Well, let me download it real quick.
This always goes well.
It's a Leo op.
JPL is always done some really interesting apps. Actually, there's quite a few great apps.
Oh, they do a Madam A skill for the Amazon Echo about Mars that Kevin and I really loved.
Is it like just facts?
Hold on. It's facts about Mars. It's like my daily Mars fact. Hold on.
Oh, I love that.
Mars facts. They're in depth. Like, they're not just normal. Like, Mars is red. You ask it a question and it will go on for like
hours.
Pages.
We've showed before their spacecraft AR app, which puts space, you know, like the Mars rover on your desktop. All right. Wait a minute. Okay. NASA. Somebody's got to tell them. Okay. Before using NASA selfies, take a moment to read our. Yeah, right. Allow. Is this really going to be a sideways video? Oh, man. All right.
So they want to get a square photo. Yeah.
Take a picture of myself. Oh, look it.
There you are. That was
there
quick.
I am. Jeez. In a spaceship in front of the Serpens cloud core. I mean, a spacesuit. Select that. I could try the Andromeda Galaxy or just a random one. Ooh, the Horsehead Nebula.
Ooh. Oh, I want that.
That's pretty.
It is pretty.
Yeah.
And for those of you guys who want it, it's the NASA Mars app. You enable it and... then you can open NASA Mars and you can ask NASA for a Curiosity rover update, or you can ask random Mars facts.
That's on the Amazon Echo.
Yes.
All right. So I'm going to get a better picture of myself. That's better. That's much better.
No. Oh, there you are. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm in the Sombrero Galaxy.
Looks like you'd need a better fitting helmet, though.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's the point, is you really do want to kind of do it close up. Let me just save that out, and I can post that on the. Oh, I don't have a Twitter account. I'll put that up on Instagram. Oh, maybe I could just post that on.
You just show us, and we'll appreciate.
I'm showing you right now. That's it.
You're talking to 1987 Leo. He's going to put it up on his CompuServe.
I'll mail you a postcard.
I've got a GeoCities page you can look at it on.
I'm mailing you a postcard of my selfie. Craig Newmark, he's at it again.
He is indeed. My friend Craig, our friend Craig.
Just gave Mother Jones, a left-wing publication, I might add, $1 million to fight fake news. Good for you, Craig.
Yep, and full disclosure, I now am a professor at the Craig Newmark Graduate School of Journalism, thanks to Craig's generosity.
He's actually the Leonard Tow Professor for Journalistic Innovation at the Craig.
We're going to have Craig on the show, and I forgot to... Sorry, Al.
When's he going to be on the show?
Connection. When, as soon as you're back, we'll arrange it.
Better be after I return.
Yeah, we need you here.
So, awesome. No, I don't have to be here. You could do it. Jason will be here.
No, we need you.
Mother Jones is nonprofit. It focuses on investigative reporting. It is absolutely.
It is really good.
I love it. Yeah.
That is the magazine that I dreamed of working for when I started as a journalist, as a little baby journalist.
Aww.
That and Rolling Stone, you know.
I guess I could post this on Google Plus.
But it does kind of bring home the fact that a lot of these sorts of things are just silly ways to get you to share.
Oh, absolutely.
Of course.
They're
it's
not.
Okay.
I know it's okay. It's Do you still have MySpace?
All right, I put it up on my Google Plus.
Do you still have MySpace?
Mastodon, toot it.
I will toot it later. Yeah. But here, it's not super high res, frankly. I'm a little disappointed.
Come on, JPL.
Come on.
Put those supercomputers to use.
What the heck?
Let's get those puppies transcoding.
I think it's fairly realistic, though. That's exactly how I would look if I were floating around the Christmas tree cluster in a spacesuit. All right, so I'm a master of the selfie on Google Plus. Lord,
you're pathetic.
I'm pathetic.
Wait.
We did. I think we. This is like. I think we've done everything.
You've got a flight to catch.
Say again.
Oh yeah, you have a. Sorry, you go catch your plane, man.
No. I'm not rushing us. I got plenty of time. How about Toyota investing $500 million in Uber? What about that, huh? Making the ride sharing company worth, or valued, I guess, shouldn't say worth, valued at $72 billion. So it's interesting, isn't it? Toyota obviously interested in the driverless car stuff, which is funny because wasn't there a noise that Uber was going to drop its driverless car research, or wasn't the board or something saying you guys should get out of that?
Yeah,
it didn't seem economical. So that is a little strange.
Well, you got another $500 million. Maybe it's more economical than you thought.
I don't know. I mean, did you see the information article on the difficulties of Waymo?
Yeah. Yeah.
Which was hilarious and very true.
So, well, but then there's also the VC, Benedict
Cumberbatch. Evans. I love him.
No.
Evans.
Evans.
Benedict Evans. He tweeted and he said, everyone he knows in autonomous vehicle world says, this is years off. We're just working. And so all these darn stories, it's more techno panic. Oh my God, it's not ready to take over the world. No, nobody who knows what they're talking about is saying that it is.
So, they're doing Waymo tests of the Chrysler Pacifica van in Arizona, and the suburban Phoenix. And apparently, the Waymo vehicles are a little hesitant sometimes. They'll like enter an intersection and pause and stop, which
as opposed to barreling through and killing someone.
Yes, exactly. And it's bothering the humans. I love this. This is Amira Frati writing at The Information. 2 weeks ago, Lisa Hargis, an administrative assistant who works at an office a stone's throw from Waymo's vehicle depot, said she nearly hit a Waymo Chrysler Pacifica minivan because it stopped abruptly while making a right turn at an intersection. Go! She shouted angrily, she said, after getting stuck in an intersection midway through a left turn. Cars that had been driving behind the Waymo also stopped. I was going to murder someone, she said. And the cars are the problem?
Well, indeed, go down to the numbers.
Excessive optimism? Oh, yeah, numbers, yes.
Axios says, one big thing, people cause most autonomous vehicle accidents.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at the chart, there is one accident in California caused by the autonomous vehicle. The six accidents caused by autonomous vehicles were caused by the person driving it at the time manually.
The Waymo vehicle, Afrati writes, is generally programmed to follow every road rule precisely. That may mean stopping for at least 3 seconds at a stop sign, whether human drivers like it or not, and turning on its blinkers well before it makes a lane change. So you could see that the problem is that people are rear-ending the thing because it's not...
Yeah. Because it's actually following the law.
It's stopping at a... How dare you stop at a stop sign?
Well, it looks like in some of these cases, it's pausing in a way that people are not anticipating
to. Right.
Well, probably also, Stacey, that example, though, wasn't the lady like starting to barge into the intersection? So it was cautiously saying, uh-oh,
yes,
she might hit me. Yes. I better stop.
Right.
Well, no, I think it was more a function of... having been behind people who drive this way, it drives me absolutely nuts. You're like, oh, they're going. It's a left turn yield kind of situation. You're just like, you make the commitment, you go, and you're ready to keep going. So you can also get in before those cars. And so when they stop, you're like,
a timid driver sometimes is more of a problem than an aggressive driver.
Yeah.
Especially if they're surrounded by aggressive drivers. One of the problems.
Drives at the speed limit, period. Yeah.
Yeah. That period. Drives people crazy. So when I drive at the speed limit, I feel like I'm a hazard. People come right up to your butt and go, and so I always now drive 7 miles. I set my Tesla to drive 7 miles above the speed limit because I figure you're not going to get a speeding ticket, but people won't be so nutty. Right?
People are always nutty.
So one of the problems the Waymo has, according to Amir, is the Zoolander problem. Like the movie character Zoolander, Waymo's minivans have issues turning left. Specifically, unprotected left turns. That's when a left-turning vehicle, you know, doesn't have the right of way. There's oncoming traffic. And in places where there are no left-turn lanes, the vans, just like human drivers, get confused by drivers in oncoming traffic who don't turn on their blinkers to signal whether they'll take a left turn or continue straight. And some drivers make such wide turns in front of the Waymo vans, the vans react defensively. So right. It's the humans.
We're terrible.
Vans get confused if they approach a line of cars in the road waiting their turn to enter a driveway, such as malls or other busy retailers. Confused means, I guess, what, they stop?
Well, it's trying to parse the situation.
Yeah, it doesn't want to just do something until it understands the situation, so that means it pauses. And that drives humans nuts.
Barreling ahead is probably not a great plan.
Yeah, I think you know what? There's going to have to be some acclimatization of the humans, not just as riders, but also as drivers. That there will be these, think of them as like student drivers. Afradi says this, like student drivers. They're very, very good student drivers, but they're a little cautious. So you just got to be more patient.
You become normative driving, and does it hold to a flow? And do you have an indemnification against them? The law says, yeah, it's safer for you to actually violate the law than it is for you not to.
Yeah,
because they can program it that way easily. They can program it to stay in the flow, especially once they're all communicating with each other.
That's the thing. Once you get the humans out, this thing that's going to be the other side of this is they're going to be whizzing around like crazy. Because they know, because you don't have to worry if the car has got a blinker on or not. You know exactly what the car is going to do. Oh, yeah, he's going that way, so I'm going to go. Zzz.
Well, that's not true. I often pause when people have their blinkers on because a lot of people in Texas,
yes,
they just drive with their blinkers on.
The fake
it's really
blinker.
Weird.
That's more dangerous.
Yes.
You assume they're turning and they plow right into you.
I never assume. I'm just like, yeah, this person could just be high, drunk. Who knows? Austinite.
So Lisa's son is 15 and a half. So we're kind of trying to model good driving. And that's one of the things. Lisa's really good. She's saying, okay, now I see that guy backing out of the driveway. Do you think he sees me? And really kind of talking through these decisions that we unconsciously make, but Michael has to learn how to make. And it is. It's a lot. Good driving is very defensive driving. People are terrible drivers.
Yeah. Yeah, my mom actually used to don't look at your mirrors. Who's behind you? What color is the car? You know, she would just quiz me periodically.
Well,
and I'll say it was really useful.
That's great.
So
I'm going to try that.
I learned.
I'm going to do that.
You should.
I'm going to do that. All right, let's take a break and we'll wrap things up. And then I will get out of
Barcelona.
Barcelona. Jamón Ibérico is waiting for me, along with a nice big glass of sangria. Our show today brought to you by our new messaging platform. It's so interesting. Everybody in the studio is saying, when are we converting? Because we've been using HipChat. HipChat got acquired in some confusing deal by Slack, and HipChat's going to be replaced by Slack. We were using HipChat, but we had used Slack before when we did the website. And then it turned out, I didn't know this, but Megan and Jason had secretly been using Slack for some time to coordinate their news show because people love Slack. And so now everybody's saying, okay, when? Megan yesterday said, I can't download HipChat anymore. Yes, you can. No, I can't. I need Slack. Slack is a collaboration hub for whatever work you do. With Slack, the right people in your team are kept in the loop. It's so much better than email. The information you need is always at your fingertips. The teamwork happens in channels, letting you organize conversations and information around teams, projects, offices, whatever you want. People who drink tea, not coffee, whatever you want. And then everything you need is in one place. It's faster and easier to get things done. We did look at alternatives. And, of course, you know, there are lots of alternatives out there. Everybody wants to be Slack, but nobody really quite is Slack. I asked Russell, well, what do you need? And we had, I think, seven or eight integrations he absolutely had to have. Applications that we use, including Atlassian's Jira and Confluence. We needed Panopto, which keeps an eye on our servers. And Slack does it. Slack integrates with more than 1,000 apps. Salesforce, Zendesk, Google Drive. You can make Slack be your central hub of everything you do. No more searching for emails for that follow-up or searching through multiple systems to find what you're looking for. You don't have to switch across multiple tabs and platforms to keep updated. It's all there. It's secure. It's fast. It's easy. And it's fun. And I don't want to, I think you shouldn't deprecate that notion either. People want to use it. You can have another solution. And if people don't use it, who cares? People love Slack. With Slack, your team is better connected. Learn more at Slack, S-L-A-C-K.com. Stuart Butterfield, this was his startup after he sold Flickr off, right, to Yahoo. And man, did he do it right. He learned quite a few lessons. His, you know, I think it was his third startup. Initially, they were going to do a game, and then they made it into Flickr, and then he sold that. And this is an awesome, awesome job. Slack.com. We thank Slack for their support. And we're all very excited about moving over.
Are you going to have a Slack group for us for the show?
You bet. Of course.
Yeah.
Do you like Slack? Will you use it?
Yes, I do. I do. Yeah.
I think I've never met anybody who doesn't like Slack.
No.
It is kind of a time waster.
That's the only complaint you ever hear is too much fun. But you could control that. When we were doing the website, I've mentioned this before, a plugin that anytime you said that's nice, which I apparently say a lot. Maybe they were trying to get me to stop saying that. I would say that's nice, and a Borat picture would show up. It would say, that's nice. In fact, it worked because I stopped saying that. So maybe that was the point. The thing I did love is we had an Alex Trebek bot, and I could just say, Alex, let's play Jeopardy. So if you're worried about productivity, you might want to leave those integrations out. But there's lots of useful stuff. Jeff, actually, let's start with Stacey and her thing of the week.
My thing of the week is, okay, are you guys ready for this? It is a smart olive oil bottle.
Oi.
How smart is it?
Oi.
Oi.
It's pretty smart. It's actually not that smart. Okay, so this is a $60 bottle. And you guys are looking at it.
Yeah.
So,
roof.
The
roof,
cool
roof.
Thing about it, I know. It's like, okay, come on, you guys.
Okay.
So the cool thing is, it is designed with glass, so it's darker, so your oil doesn't have a lot of light hit it, which is bad for your olive oil. And then it's a refill program. So when you're 80% through your olive oil, it glows.
Jesus.
Which you're like, Jesus. Do I care?
This is the Juicero of olive oil bottles.
Yeah.
So then you for $12 you get a refill
in a bag.
You put it in.
You get olive oil in a bag.
Well, that's actually kind of nice because that's easier to ship. I'm a pro
that's
bag,
true.
And you
that's
just stick it in
point.
There.
Yeah. That's a good point.
That's less wasteful.
I can imagine this PowerPoint to propose this.
They have a small. So, they're Dutch, though, which is not known as an olive oil nation.
So, yeah, I mean, this is more. This is not something I would buy, and I use a lot of olive oil. But if you know you're interested.
Can I show you my pick of the week?
Oh, sure.
Yeah. You put the olive oil in these squeeze bottles. They're about
actually,
a buck each.
I think it was Kenji Lopez Alt. These are actually awesome. And you know what you do?
What?
This is the pro tip, everyone. On the side, mark out your favorite dressing recipes. So like a quarter cup of olive oil, you know, half a
you nailed
cup
it.
Of lemon juice. And then you shake them up.
Yep. I have. You buy these a dozen at a shot. I mean, they're like a buck each. Mm-hmm. I have one next to the stove that's filled with that delicious olive oil. We have a sponsor that's an olive oil sponsor, Tres Puntas, and it's really good. So I keep that there. And then I have another one that is my vinaigrette, which is balsamic, olive oil, a little Dijon mustard, salt and pepper. You shake it up, and I squirt it on everything. It's fabulous. Yeah. Fabulous.
Then you do the recipe, though, on the side. And then people can make it when you're out.
Oh, that's smart.
Isn't that? So, like, you're no longer the dressing key. Like, in my house, they're like, Stacey, could you whip up some of your hazelnut dressing? And I'm like,
I have a dressing I make with, instead of olive oil, I use cashews. You soak them, and then you put them in the Vitamix, and it liquefies them.
Cashew milk.
Yeah, it makes it amazing.
It's a popular vegan cream. I'm serious. That's like half the steps of a vegan queso right there.
Ooh, you had me at queso.
Vegan. I said vegan queso.
So there's no cheese.
Right. It's cashew cream.
How does it taste?
I think that's against the law. I think that's why you have to move to Seattle. Because you're not allowed to be in Texas anymore. Because you violated queso statute number one.
But wait, Jeff, it's a popular vegan queso.
It may not be as bad as, you know, Chipotle queso.
Yeah, well, nothing.
Nothing's as bad as Chipotle queso.
All right. Thank you, Stacey.
You know, Stacey, I want your bottle. What your bottle should come with, Andy Brains, is gin.
Ah, now you're talking.
It's getting empty. Give me the bag of gin, honey.
I would love that. I would love the mail order gin. Unfortunately, blue laws make that difficult.
Oh, yeah. You're probably in a state where you can't get that kind of thing.
I can't ship alcohol here for anything. Yeah,
California,
makes me so sad.
Everything goes. You can ship pot. You can ship anything.
No, and I have this awesome gin, and I can't get it delivered to me. It's from Utah.
Oh,
and
that
I'm like,
sucks.
God.
What's the name of it? I'll have it delivered to me and then drink it for you.
Excellent. That's a great plan. It's called, it's by Beehive Distillery. It's called Jack Rabbit Gin. If you guys can get it. Oh, it's amazing gin.
I had a really good, I didn't have it, but I just sniffed my drinking colleague's gin in Buenos Aires. Local gin. It was really wonderful smell.
So is it the combination of botanicals that makes this so good?
It is a really delicious gin. It's juniper forward, but it's also kind of sweet.
Oh.
It's a nice mix.
It's
not
like good for a G&T, huh?
It's good for a G&T. It actually is amazing in an aviation. So,
oh, I love an aviation.
And you know what else it's good in?
What?
Southside, which we've been drinking a lot here in Texas.
Oh. What would a Southside be?
It is three quarters of an ounce of simple, three quarters lime juice, some mint leaves, and 2 ounces of gin.
Oh, okay.
Easy.
That's
easy,
like an aviator.
Drink.
That's similar to an aviator, isn't it?
I was talking about an aviation. An aviation.
An
has,
aviation, I mean.
No, an aviation is lemon juice, creme de violet, and gin. And
can you come to my house and I will get the beehive? If you'll make the salad dressing.
Excellent. Done.
Done. Mr. Jeffrey Jarvis, you have a number for us? You haven't given them all away,
already,
have you?
But I've got one. I got one thanks to Ms. Stacey Higginbotham.
Oh, yes.
Who was thinking of me on Twitter. And I'm grateful.
Yes.
And I said, ooh, as soon as I saw it. From
you didn't
Mr.
Get
Kevin
three?
Toefel, who says that the Pixelbook 2 could end up having LTE, which is what I've been wanting to have. I love this from Kevin's post on about Chromebooks. During my daily scan of the FCC database today, this is what
Lord.
Kevin does for
that's hard
for
work.
Wow. Yeah. So he stumbled across that. So that'd be really nice. I'd like that if I could take my combination laptop, tablet, whatever the heck it is, anywhere in the world. I'm going to bet it's going to be Google Fi compatible.
I think you're actually, the world is on your side on this one, Jeff, because of 5G. I think that most devices, including laptops, will be wireless enabled.
If your stupid watch has LTE, why doesn't your device where you're watching things and doing things all
day? No, I think you'll see LTE everywhere soon.
The question is, what are the plans going to be? But that's where Google can make a difference with Fi.
Right.
Yes. I mean, I hope it doesn't charge some ridiculous monthly fee for having it, but it just puts you into your data feed, whatever it is, and then that's easy. Then I just have multiple devices.
I will be taking T-Mobile and Google Fi. And remember, I learned that Google Fi does not work in Monaco. So I will walk a couple of blocks to France.
And so what happens for me, Leo, does this happen for you with Fi?
Yeah.
I hit Buenos Aires. And it took like 4 hours for it to recognize.
No. It goes right away. Because I like to check in to Foursquare the minute I land, wheels down. Can I keep my Foursquare?
No.
I can only keep social media no one uses. That's my rule now. So I'm on Google Plus,
MySpace.
Plus. Mastodon. I will be tooting.
What about Snapchat? Where does that fall?
No, it's right out. Too popular. Maybe if it goes downhill a little more, it has a shot.
Okay, I was like, it's not.
It's on its way out. As soon as no one uses it, I'll be there.
Excellent.
Actually, I think that's a pretty good rule of thumb for social media. Only use social media no one else is using.
Because you find no one there.
It's anti-social media. So I will also be carrying this to have global Wi-Fi with me. This is the Skyroam. We tried it in Japan. It worked really well. It's not cheap. It's, I think, $9 a day for unlimited for five devices, $99 for the month. But between me and Lisa, $99, this is much better than Verizon or T-Mobile. Well, T-Mobile gives you slow speed.
What about your
Fi, though? Fi is $10 a gigabyte. So, but is Fi going to be as fast? So I will, in a way, be testing all of these devices. I had used it in Japan and really liked it. It was a real because I don't have Fi on every device. I don't have it on my laptop. I guess I could do a hotspot.
What's the name of it again?
It's called the Skyroam Solus. You can rent it or buy it. It's like $150 to buy it. It's basically it's like a MiFi, but what I like about it, it's a little bit bigger, which means you can use it also to charge your phone. It's a battery pack as well. And
it's global.
It's totally global, which is really cool. So you don't have to change SIMs or anything. It just works, $99, and that's important because I'm going to be in seven different countries in 3 weeks. So,
do you buy time that expires or any of that?
No, it doesn't expire. Well, yes, you do. You subscribe. You either get a day pass, which expires at the end of the day, but there's no bandwidth cap.
How much is a day pass? $9 a day.
$9 a day, but I'm going to do the $99 for the month because we're going for 3 weeks, so it'll be a better deal.
Yeah.
And
it's $99 for the puck.
I think the puck's $150. I'm not sure.
$150.
Yeah.
Okay.
But you could rent it.
Oh.
And if you rented it for $10 a day, if you didn't use it all the time, that would make
sense. Well, $10 a day is actually what Verizon charges for daily internet access on phone.
That's right.
And AT&T, I think, charges that too.
So they're $99 is the better deal if you're going to be gone long enough. If you're only gone a week, it's not worth it. But if you're gone 2 weeks, then it would be a better deal. And somebody told me there are bandwidth caps. I never ran into them, so I'll give you a report when I get back. But this is going to be
I think you need to use it and join us on Twig. Actually,
I don't know if it's going to be that fast. Should I?
That's a good test.
All right, next Wednesday. Wait a minute, let me see where I'm going to be. I don't know where I'm going to be, but
if it's Wednesday,
it must be Belgium. Tuesday? Oh, are we switched? It's going to be. If it's Tuesday.
We don't know.
Next week. It will be Wednesday.
I'll be in Portugal. Portugal. And the Algarves. I'll be in Portugal. And then we do this show at 2000 UTC. Oh, I might have sailed by then. I might be at sea. That's the bad thing about a cruise. You know, you leave, the ship sails, so my ship will have sailed. I'm sorry, I'll be at sea. I can't talk to you.
That's a really good excuse.
I'll be on my way to Tangier. I'll be sailing. I'm sailing from Portugal to Tangier. I think.
Leo, are you? Wait a second. You are going to take it, aren't you?
Oh, I should wear a fez in Fez.
Well, hell yes.
Do you have like a costume drawer or something that's right over there?
It was right there. Ready? Yeah, actually, you know, I had to do some calculations because Apple's event is going to be on September 12th and midnight Pacific time on Friday the 14th, we think. And that turns out perfectly to be 9 a.m. as we sail into Amalfi, Italy. So I will be busy ordering an iPhone, not looking at the scenery, going refreshing the Apple Store like crazy.
I'm worried because I think that Google's going to put out like three or four things. I can't afford them all.
Oh,
if I knew, I think my priority is a new Pixel.
The consensus seems to be that the event, we didn't mention this, will be October 9th.
Yes.
Google has not said, but it is consensus. I don't know why. In New York. Certainly the Pixel 3, we've seen that in many a Ukrainian video. But you think they're going to do a new Chromebook, a Pixel book?
A new Pixel book and a watch, say, some rumors, right?
We're pretty sure they're going to do a watch. In fact, we didn't mention the new Android Wear. I should have put that in the change.
I tried to make us talk about that. The Coach or the new Wear?
Just there's some updates to Wear OS.
Yeah.
And Coach has one?
No. Google's putting out a new thing called Coach.
Oh,
the Coach. Oh, yeah.
Android Coach.
Yeah. We talked about the new Fit last week, but this is it. Meet your health and fitness partner. So I'll probably order one of these. Sure. Although I actually am very happy with the Apple Watch after its various updates. Wear
I'm
OS
super happy with my Fitbit.
Works on iPhone and Android phone. You like your Fitbit. Who doesn't?
I do. I love it.
Who doesn't?
It's easy.
Fits easy. Ladies and gentlemen, we have come to the concluding moment of this show, and I thank you all for being here. Jeff Jarvis is director of the Townite Center for Entrepreneurial Journalism at the Craig Newmark Graduate School of Journalism at the City University of New York. He also is a mighty fine fez wearer. Actually, he's wearing the chapeau today.
Oh, it's the chapeau. Where is my fez?
Oh, now you're going to just make...
Oh, wait.
You're just going to make Stacey jealous.
Oh, man.
He has a
Why
fez.
Is it in your costume trunk?
And a chapeau. We should arrange for Stacy to acquire some of this headgear. Thank you, Jeff.
That's
thank
okay.
You, Jeff. That's machine.com.
I do anything for the show. Yes. I make a fool of myself in any way I can.
Yes. You look good in a fez chapeau.
You do. Yeah. You actually, I feel like fezes are pretty hard to pull off, but Jeff, it works on you.
It's the goatee. It works so well.
You know, in the high cheekbones, maybe?
You look like a guy Indiana Jones might run into in the Casbah who has a tip, a lead on where...
And then stabs on the way.
Yeah, right.
Out.
Thank you, Jeff. Thank you, Stacey Higginbotham. She does that great podcast and, of course, her newsletter, too. You'll find them both at StaceyOnIoT.com. And she's still on Twitter, as is Jeff. She's at GigaStacey. He's at Jeff Jarvis. See y'all on Mastodon. I'll be tooting a little later.
And goodbye.
Thank you, Stacey. Thank you, Jeff. Thank you all for being here. We do This Week in Google every Wednesday, round about 1:30 Pacific, 4:30 Eastern, 20:30 UTC. You should stop by and watch us do it live. You can either be in studio, email tickets at twit.tv, or you can watch the live stream we make available at twit.tv/live. We stream live all day and all night. You can always catch something. Sometimes it's reruns, but it's, you know, live to you. If you do that, though, join the chat room. They're there live all the time, irc.twit.tv. And if you can't be here live or watch in person, you can always get on demand at our website, twit.tv/twig, or subscribe in your favorite podcast application. That way you will get it every Wednesday afternoon the minute it's available. Thanks for watching. I am gone for 3 weeks. I'll be back Sunday on the 23rd for This Week in Tech, and then the following Wednesday for This Week in Google. Jason Howell will be filling in for me, though, so you guys are in good hands. Thank you so much.
We are indeed.
We'll see you next time on This Week in Google. Bye-bye.